content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Glamour Magazine, 17 Magazine, and a special edition of Real Simple. It is Best Ways to Be Healthy, Life Made Easier. And today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at kiwanisfoundation.org. Welcome back, everyone. Today is the 31st of May, long month, and it is 10 p.m., and we are back together, and I'm glad for it. So we're going to be wrapping up the May issue of Gourmet. I always want to say Gourmet. Glamour Magazine. This food is on my mind. And the first article that we have is, could you give up your signature? This is a scent swap, S-C-E-N-T. So what is this about? I've wanted a signature scent since I was old enough to convince my mom to buy me glitter-filled perfumes from Claire's. As I've gotten older, I've graduated to more sophisticated, less sparkly fragrances, but I still love the idea of being immediately identifiable by an amazing smell. After the perfume that I'd been wearing since college was tragically discontinued, there may have been tears, it took a while for me to find a replacement. I gravitate toward clean, floral scents, so I scoured the shelves of Sephora, going through bottles of Elizabeth and James Nirvana White or Fresh Citron de Vigne, but I still didn't like anything enough to actually purchase a second bottle. It wasn't until I unwrapped a bottle of Diptyque du Sang last Hanukkah that I found my new go-to. And by the way, that's spelled D-I-P-T-Y-Q-U-E D-O-S-O-N. It's sweet in a sophisticated way, and it's what I imagine it smells like to sit inside a very fancy flower shop. So, it was with reluctance that, at the request of the Glamour Beauty Team, I swapped my Dosson for something totally different. We settled on the heavy, earthy, and slightly tangy Gucci Guilty Absolute Pour Fum. Sure, they share notes of blackberry, but otherwise, these two are polar opposites. I agreed to give it a week. On the first day, I picked up the sleek, guilty bottle and sprayed it on my wrists while looking longingly at my trusty Dosun, and that's D-O-S-O-N. As I went through the motions of my day, I kept being surprised by my own musky smell. I constantly had to remind myself that those woody notes were coming from me. And no, my sweater didn't smell like a stranger because someone at the dry cleaner secretly wore it. Here's the thing about a signature perfume. When you wear yours enough, it becomes almost a part of you, and you don't really notice it anymore. So I was hyper aware of this new eau de d'Alana, and it became kind of exciting. Sporting a new scent was like trying out a new persona. Maybe I was sexy and mysterious. Maybe this new me should also opt for a smoky eye, wear dresses with high slits, and get side bangs. Okay, I didn't get that crazy. The most I did was grill a coworker about her bangs, but it was fun to think about. At the end of the week, I went back to my Dosun. Familiar as it might be, there's a reason it's my signature scent. I absolutely love it. That said, Gucci Guilty has earned a spot on my vanity to be taken out on special occasions, because you never know when you might need a bit of help summoning your sexy self. Alrighty, so that's about scents. And now we're going to talk about other scents, as in C-E-N-T-S. This article is entitled Side Hustle Truths. Can you really make any money through the gig economy? A lot of women who busted into the professional world during the Great Recession have tried more than a few unconventional methods of making rent, but I never could have anticipated the recent Thursday evening I spent folding a stranger's underwear. Let's get to that episode in a second. First, about me. I'm a journalist, proud of my profession despite its meager dividends. But sometimes I wonder, could the gig economy, which really is a reductive little phrase used to describe easy entry, odd jobs that, when cobbled together, theoretically add up to a reasonable living or, at the least, a lucrative side hustle, make my budgeted life more comfortable? I decided to see what results might come of a full court press effort and a willingness to try almost anything once. For my first go, I tried out Craigslist. A flower shop was looking for an assistant. A research facility called Media Science sought panelists. A gentleman's club needed extra, scantily clad help on Super Bowl Sunday. I sent CVs and emails flurrying all over New York City. Not one response. Undaunted, I tried registering to be a tasker on TaskRabbit. I paid a $20 registration fee, indicated what I thought were fair rates for the suggested tasks, assembling IKEA furniture, $30 an hour, and so on, and submitted my application. Almost automatically, a form email appeared in my inbox. "Hi, Helen," it read. "At this time, we do not have the demand for taskers in the city and categories you've specified, so we'll not be moving forward with your registration." I laughed out loud, but my rejection made sense. If it's nearly impossible to get a job interview at the New York Times or Goldman Sachs, it stands to reason you'll be fighting hordes for the considerably smaller scraps too. Luckily, deliverance soon arrived in the form of a friend who needed help caring for her brand new puppy, a 16-week-old Klee-Kai named Juno. I would take him for an afternoon walk and give him lunch for $40 per visit. Our first outing was glorious, but disaster struck during our second appointment. I struggled with the antique front door of the owner's apartment, and yelp! The poor little guy got trapped in the heavy oak door. He was shaken, but fine. My dog walking days, however, were done. Next, I trumpeted my services on Twitter. An acquaintance responded. She needed some help with laundry. A day later, I made a house call to my client who asked, "Do you have a problem with washing and folding period-stained sheets?" I waved my hand as if to say, "Perish the thought," and steeled myself like Indiana Jones preparing to raid a cave. I was tasked with washing everything she owned. Jeans, sweatshirts, 9 pairs of matching socks, the aforementioned sheets, and I went home $20 richer, and with a vivid mental image of her boyfriend's Under Armour boxers. Ultimately, my week-long experiment netted me $100 total. But once you factor in the multiple subway trips and the cash I spent on Red Bull for fuel, it would be generous to say I scraped a $90 profit. If I'm honest, I kind of expected pathetic results. I've always been skeptical of the gig economy. It creates a fantasy that if you can profit off your every marketable skill, you can subvert the hardships of the millennial generation, including insurmountable student debt, too many music streaming services to choose from, and the escalating cost of vape pens. Millennials are raised to be brutally hard workers, even if some of us, me, are probably doomed to spend our lives writing jokes online. We deserve better than what the gig economy has to offer. And Helena Holmes is a freelance journalist living in Brooklyn. And here are some celebs with side hustles. Lindsay Scott, her hustle? Coder. Scott knows a thing or two about chipping away at the glass ceiling. As a model, she was the first African-American to score an exclusive runway contract with Calvin Klein. And in STEM, she coded top apps like SquareFi and iPort. But starting her side gig didn't come easily. "I'd get talked down to by guys in tech," she says. "But my clients know I'm talented, and that's enough." Melissa George, her hustle? Inventor. The Good Wife star created Hemming My Way, a device that lets you self-hem pants with an easy snap. Why don't you see her on the packaging? I've played some not-so-nice characters, like an alias, and I didn't want my sales to be negatively affected, she says. Her next big idea? A device that keeps bread forever warm. And finally, Michelle Ouellet. Her hustle? Vintner. You know model Ouellet as the face of J. Crew, but she also owns Lorenza Wine Company, the rosé brand she started with her mom. Despite her growing up in Napa Valley, it was Ouellet's modeling that led her to winemaking. "I discovered rosé in Paris before rosé mania," she jokes. She side hustles while traveling for photo shoots. "I'll send emails while I'm in makeup and always check out local wine scenes." All right, in our next article, what is good TV sex anyway? When Glamour asked me to write an article about sexual empowerment, my first thought was, oh, holy God, I have no idea. I mean, I have had some really bad sex in my life, mostly because the cultural message I received as I grew up, both explicitly and implicitly, was that sex was a pleasure and prerogative reserved for men. I crafted my bedroom behavior around what I had seen women do on television. Lots of excessive moaning and hair tossing, but very little personal satisfaction. Funny, then, that my first big TV job was on a show called Masters of Sex. My character, Libby Masters, began the series entirely under her husband's thumb. She literally called him Daddy. He didn't view her as a sexual creature at all. Libby goes on to have an emotional and physical affair, and through that experience begins the journey toward self-discovery. At the end of season four, we find her loudly having sex with her new boyfriend in the back of a VW van right before telling him she's moving to California to pursue her dream of going to law school. "But I love you," he says. Her response? "I'm no longer organizing my life around a man." At first blush, my newest character, Simone, in Sweet Bitter, Starz' adaptation of Stephanie Dandler's best-selling 2016 novel, begins where Libby left off, as a seasoned waitress at an iconic modern-day New York City restaurant. Simone appears to be living a life of bohemian splendor. Instead of finding a man to marry her and whisk her away to a big house in Connecticut, she's chosen a life of poetry and art, good food, and better wine. She appears to be a master of the sensual, and therefore, we assume, the sexual. But as you dig deeper, it becomes increasingly clear that Simone uses the people around her, especially Jake, a much younger coworker with whom she shares a murky sexual history, to reinforce the mysterious, alluring image she's built for herself. If Libby Masters found freedom from her safe life through her sexuality, Simone longs to find a sense of control with hers by seducing everyone but never letting anyone get close. I relate to both Libby and Simone. They are complex, flawed, interesting women. But they're also a bit problematic. Why is it that in order for a female character to appear empowered, she must always choose herself over a relationship? Why can't there be room for stories about empowered heterosexual women who also experience love and intimacy with a man? And during this moment of cultural upheaval, how do we crack the whole thing open to make more room for all kinds of sexual narratives, all kinds of pleasures and preferences, all kinds of bodies? The truth is, I don't know what makes a sexually empowered woman, and I would be a little suspicious of anyone who can outline it in under 800 words. What I do believe is that sexuality and empowerment have to be defined by each of us on our own terms. No one else, on TV or elsewhere, has the power to tell us what good sex feels or looks like. I remember in one of my first naked scenes as Libby Masters, I had to drop my robe and stare at my bare body in a bathroom mirror, all alone. No co-star there to sexualize the moment. No moaning, no hair tossing, just me and my body and the mirror. Sweating about it beforehand, I made some comment to my co-star, Lizzie Kaplan, about how I wished I had hit the gym a little harder, maybe laid off the breakfast burritos. She replied, "Oh, please, there's never, ever enough time to prepare for a naked scene." She was right. No matter what I did, I was never going to feel perfect enough for TV nakedness, for TV sexiness. I would have to be good enough exactly as I was. When I rewatch the scene now, it seems as if Libby is seeing herself for the first time. And in many ways, I was too. "Oh," I thought, as the robe hit the floor, "we are all just bodies." How fun. And Caitlin Fitzgerald is a New York City-based actress. Sweet Bitter premieres on Starz, STARZ, this month. Well, as we approach the summer, we may be getting out and about a little bit more. Or maybe not, because it might get so hot. But our next story or article is from a special edition of Real Simple, Best Ways to Be Healthy. And this comes from Todd, North Carolina, where I found myself in nature, by Emily Nunn. About 2 years ago, I came to Todd, North Carolina, like a character from a gothic novel, with the intention of getting lost in a dark wood. After decades of living in the hubbub of New York and Chicago, where I wrote about restaurants and food, I arrived in the Blue Ridge Mountains with two suitcases and a box of cookbooks, haunted by a series of devastating losses that I should have made peace with years earlier, but had not. The death of a sibling by suicide, followed by the disappearance of practically every aspect of my previous life, my home, my proud career, my last shreds of self-respect. My life was broken, but I was afraid to put it back together, worried it would turn out the same as before. I was no longer the person I had been. It felt like I wasn't anyone at all. I was convinced it was best for everyone that I'd be very far from other people. My ridiculous idea? I'd ghost my own life. I ended up in a converted barn on rustic rural farmland, pretty close to a small town in Virginia where I'd grown up, but too far away from a grocery store to call it civilization. In the beginning, I took endless lonesome walks, during which I met herds of donkeys and cows, but rarely any humans. And that was fine by me. My old friends, like all my belongings in storage, just reminded me of my former life. I soon discovered that the barn's roof leaked when it rained. It was so bitterly cold in winter that I had to wear a wool cap to bed, and I was often afraid of the snakes that left their empty skins around the barn, and the occasional bear, possum, or raccoon, the last of which would show up on my porch when I baked. I was also quite afraid of my own isolation. I was very lonely for a long time. It felt like a necessary and painful cure, the only way I could undergo the kind of ruthless self-examination, unclouded by other voices, that I required. But once spring came again, because it always does, I became aware that the meadow I lived on had exploded with gorgeous purple and yellow flowers and polychromatic birds I didn't recognize. Oh, this is what it means to be alive on the earth. This is nature. In the summer, I slowly began to meet my far-off neighbors, some as they rode their horses past the barn at dusk, one who sold me his perfect blackberries, which I turned into cobbler for another neighbor, and one who gave me soft baby lettuce from her garden because I stopped my car to say hello. Everyone had a vegetable garden and fruit trees, so I planted a garden of my own. As I spent my mornings pulling weeds around delicate tomatoes and squash, I began to mentally separate the good from the bad in my life, promising myself I'd truly value and nurture what was good and make it grow stronger. It requires a certain amount of foolish stubbornness to take the unmarked, unfamiliar road, but rather than getting lost out there, I found myself again. I'm still afraid of snakes and spiders, but I'm not sure I've ever been happier. And I'm ready to rejoin the living. Emily Nunn's memoir, The Comfort Food Diaries, was published in September of 2017. All right. So, here are some your words from Kuleawau, Hawaii. Here, we host a Halloween block party with skits and share Christmas breakfast with everyone on our lane. It's the kind of place to love. El Cerrito, California. We live in one of the lowest-ranked school districts in the state, and yet people believe in and work hard at making our public schools work for all our kids. Our city also now celebrates Loving Day, the day interracial marriage was made legal by the Supreme Court. Cape Cod, Massachusetts? Where do I begin? There are countless hidden treasures. Each village is so different from the next. Of course, there's also my happy place, the beach. And finally, McCook, Nebraska. We have a great network of volunteers, from the Chamber of Commerce to the churches. We have so many people who care and want our community to thrive. All right, and finally, I have a recipe for you. Make it yourself a delicious essential that's better homemade than store-bought will prove it. Ramen. Gone are the days when ramen meant instant noodles and a sodium-laden seasoning packet. Not only is homemade ramen easy and healthy, but it's ready in just half an hour. The base of our vegetarian version is a rich miso broth flavored with ginger and garlic. Earthy mushrooms and a creamy soft-boiled egg make it a substantial main. If you can't find fresh ramen noodles, use dried. Just ditch the salty flavor packet. All right, 4 teaspoons vegetable oil divided. 1/3 pound shiitake mushrooms, stems removed. 4 scallions, sliced, white and green parts separated. 1¾-inch piece fresh ginger, peeled and finely chopped. 3 cloves garlic, chopped. 6 cups vegetable broth. 2 tablespoons white miso. 1 tablespoon plus 1 teaspoon tamari or soy sauce. 2 teaspoons toasted sesame oil. 4 large eggs. 12-ounce fresh ramen noodles or 4 3-ounce packets of dry ramen. 2 heads baby bok choy quartered lengthwise. 2 teaspoons toasted sesame seeds. 2 teaspoons crushed red pepper flakes. So you add the mushrooms to 2 teaspoons of vegetable oil, and you cook until beginning to brown about 4 minutes. Then you remove them from the pot. You reduce the heat to medium, add remaining 2 teaspoons oil, add the scallions, ginger, garlic. Cook stirring until fragrant about 2 minutes. Add the broth and bring it to a simmer. Transfer a ladle full of broth from pot to a small bowl. Add miso and whisk until smooth. Return to pot. Add tamari or sesame oil. Tamari or soy sauce and sesame oil. Lower eggs into a large pot of gently boiling water. Cook for 6 minutes. Using a slotted spoon, transfer eggs to a bowl of ice water set aside. Return water to a boil, add noodles and bok choy. Cook until noodles are al dente, 2 to 3 minutes. Drain, remove the bok choy, rinse noodles under cold water, drain again, divide noodles and bok choy among bowls. Peel the eggs and halve lengthwise. Pour the broth over the noodles, top with the mushroom, eggs, and scallion greens. Roughly chopped sesame seeds and red pepper flakes sprinkle over bowls. Crumble nori over each bowl if desired. Yum, yum. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Annika Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Make those ramen noodles. Let me know how they are, too. Have a great week. See you next week in June.